Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Glowatz. Ben Jarofsky writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and he's here with me today in the land of dibs.
You saw my neighbor.
You don't use dibs?
Well, I have a garage.
Oh.
My car has been buried in that garage for over a week, and I have to overcome my fear and anxiety of driving in the snow. And
I thought you were going to say bicycling.
My fear and anxiety over bicycling in the winter is so profound that I will not go near a bike in this snow.
Today, we're talking about the mayoral election going on this month.
Okay.
Listeners, early voting takes place from February 9th to the 21st, and the big election day is February 24th.
That is correct, Senator.
There are five candidates remaining from a field of 10 originally.
Wow.
Ben, you wrote about a recent campaign tactic from one of those candidates, the incumbent. I'm talking about your article that appeared in The Reader on January 29th, 2015, Obama once again comes to Rahm's rescue.
Yeah, my president.
In this article, you talk about the 60-second radio spot that President Obama has recorded for Mayor Rahm Emanuel to tell voters why they should vote for Rahm Emanuel, just as the president plans to.
Wait, is the president still a registered voter in Chicago?
He intimates in the recording that he is going to vote for Rahm.
Okay.
So that implies he's not voting in wherever. He lives in D.C. now, right?
He did vote in the last election in Chicago. So, okay.
Listeners might not have heard the 60-second spot, so let's play that for them.
Oh, my God, you poor listeners.
This is Barack Obama. There's a reason Chicago fights Rahm Emanuel. He believes every child in every neighborhood should be shot night and day. Rahm is the shortest mayor in any American city. The guy can be a little child. There's a reason for bringing Rahm to town. I'm hard-headed. And let's be honest. If Rahm is mayor, Chicago's shot. If you want a mayor who's not popular, if you want hard times in Chicago, vote for Rahm Emanuel on Tuesday, February 24th. Why should I care? I'm working in Washington.
Who did that?
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, things get garbled on the internet.
Did.
Apparently,
that was very funny.
The internet screwed that up. Let's try it again.
God, I have to hear this again. I just, the background music alone is so irritating.
There's something subliminal going on there. Yeah. Let's listen to that. Listeners, pay attention to the music.
This is Barack Obama. You know, even though I'm working in Washington right now, Chicago's my home. It's the place that made me who I am. It's why I care so deeply about who leads our city. Before Rahm Emanuel was mayor of Chicago, he was a key part of my team at the White House. And let's be honest, at times the guy can be a little hard-headed. But there's a reason Rahm fights as hard as he does. He loves our city, and he believes every child in every neighborhood should have a fair shot at success. Chicago had the shortest school day of any American city, until Rahm insisted that our kids get the same educational opportunity as other kids. He delivered full-day kindergarten to every Chicago child. That's not all. He raised the minimum wage, and he helped create thousands of Chicago jobs by bringing new businesses to town. If you want a mayor who does what's right, not just what's popular, who fights night and day for the city we love, then I hope you'll join me. Vote for Rahm Emanuel on Tuesday, February 24th.
Paid for by Chicago for Rahm Emanuel.
You gotta listen to him. I hope you join me. He didn't actually say, I will be voting for. He said, I hope you'll join me. I don't, but whatever, okay. Doesn't
Well, no one will know,
No one will know.
I haven't learned what outlets are running this ad, have you?
WVON, I think, is running it like day, night, every minute of the day. You know?
I haven't. Of course, I don't listen. I listen to WVON, but I always turn off the commercials.
Yeah.
Anybody else did your work?
I have no. Well, okay, you're asking the wrong person since I don't watch TV.
It's a radio ad.
No, I understand. Or I was about to say, or listen to the radio, except for sports talk.
They're not running it there.
Yes.
Well, this ad is an addition to a blitz of TV ads. I'm told that in these ads, the mayor does not speak directly to the viewers or listeners. Why do you think that is?
I was unaware. I hadn't thought of that. I've seen those commercials. I dutifully watch them on YouTube.
There are other people talking about the mayor.
Yeah, there are other people talking because he's such an unlikable human being that would only hurt him. So he gets surrogates. So you get the woman who's the chancellor of the
city colleges.
Yeah, city colleges system. And for reasons I'm not quite sure why, they call her a community college activist, even though she's the chancellor of the system. So
a little obfuscation.
Well, yeah, probably because, I don't know, There's maybe
implies that she was appointed by him, and she was.
Yes. Well, also maybe there's some rules against the chancellor of the Chicago system endorsing him.
Using her title. Yeah.
I actually think Chicago voters, for the first time in the post-Harold Washington years, are aware of the fact that they're about to do something monumentally stupid and that they don't want to do. And so they're kind of wrestling with that. I actually think that's going on, as opposed in the past where they were just, they're going to vote for Daley because it's like breathing. It's something you have to do. But I think actually there's brain activity going on. Yes, I do believe that. It's a monumental improvement.
You feel that there's some cognitive dissonance going on.
Yes.
In the mind of the average Chicago voter that they're inclined to vote for the mayor, but they know that there's something.
I would reverse it. I would say, and this is my humble opinion, I've not done an analysis of the brain works of the average Chicago voter. I would think that most people in Chicago truly dislike Mayor Rahm. They know he's full of crap. They know that this has been a Republican-led initiative, if you will. I don't know how else to say it. It's like Republican ideology on full blast. They know that in this last 6 months, he's reversed field and has transformed himself into something that he hasn't been in the first 3 years. And their inclination is to vote against him. And yet, they're struggling with that because there's many different reasons. You could take it section by section. You know, there are upper class white areas of the city where they realize on some basic level that his policies work to their benefit, so they're going to vote for him. There's Republicans in Chicago who believe in Republican policies, so they're going to vote for him. And then you have a combination of people who are afraid of what would happen if we didn't have an all-powerful mayor. So they would vote for him.
The strong mayor mentality.
Yes, which is very prevalent here in Chicago.
You said that when white people talk about a strong mayor, that's code for white mayor.
Well, it's code for don't let a black guy get mayor, yeah. And then there's people who just don't like the opposition. That's a sliver. So it's really a referendum on Rahm. I have a feeling that Chicagoans are actually struggling with this, and they don't want to vote for him, but that's why I keep saying it's up in the air. Will there be a runoff? Will there won't be? It's like this battle going on in the mind of the average Chicagoan.
Well, if you're going to stake out that territory, as some have, where you believe that there will be a runoff, you have to have some way to justify, to rationalize that. So you just have.
It's more like, you know, a faith. I have nothing to substantiate it. I mean, I keep talking about polls that show that Rahm has not gone over the 50% threshold that he needs to avoid a runoff. So that's interesting. But those same polls show that there's a large chunk of undecided. So it's like, do I want to believe in the integrity of my fellow Chicagoans?
We've been down that road before.
Yeah, we've been down that road. It's filled with snow right now, that road.
The road is lined with sheep. One of the things that may affect the voting decisions of the undecided is the series of candidate forums and so-called debates that we're in the midst of right now. Have you seen any of these?
Yes, I've seen all but last night's, and I plan to watch that, and I will see them all by the time this show airs.
What do you think of the style and the format?
Well, they vary. I mean, I kind of enjoyed the WTTW debate on one level where Phil Ponce, the moderator, was
peppering
them. I kind of enjoyed that. I have a hard time with debates in general because I'm the kind of guy in a debate, sort of like a sporting event, I have to control the impulse to yell at the TV. That's a lie! And so something like that. So these are very emotional things for me, and you don't want to be in the room with me when the debate's going on.
Well, this is exactly a question I want to ask. Do these forums or debates, because I think the case could be made that there's no real debate going on in any of these.
Well, it's not Lincoln Douglas, if that's what you're asking for. That's the
because
epitome.
They're not really addressing and responding to each other.
That is correct.
At a very, very small level. But it appears to me that no one who moderates or, in one case, interviews these has a deep enough understanding of the issues to be able to challenge the mayor on his talking points, which he is very good at mixing and matching and synthesizing depending on the answer. Or as he said in one of the first forums, do you have questions for my answers?
Yes.
Do you agree that there could have been someone like yourself who yells at the TV and who knows enough that when he says something like that he's implemented a longer school day,
yeah.
Well, here's why that's not a benefit.
All right, here's the problem with that. I've moderated debates. I do them all the time, aldermanic debates. Well, actually, the things I moderate are, now that I think of the distinction that you so eloquently laid out, they're forums, they're not debates. So everybody They're lined up on a stage, and one single question is asked, and each candidate responds. So the moderator is essentially reading a question.
And more often than not, not following up.
That is correct, because there's another question. So those things are of limited usefulness in terms of probing truth versus fiction of the response. So generally, a voter is responding to the manner in which the candidate addresses the issue. So it's a popularity contest. So yes, these debates, forums, whatever they are, TV shows, spectacles, whatever you want to call them.
I like spectacle.
A spectacle are of limited use toward engaging us in any kind of meaningful analysis or discussion of what's going on in Chicago. For that, you must read the Chicago Reader and Dave Glowatz. So having said that, yes, there's limitations, but it's really difficult. You raise an interesting point, like going back to the WTTW debate. I mean, what really has never happened with this mayor is for a moderator like Phil Ponce, a sharp guy, to address the mayor one-on-one in the way that Phil Ponce addressed Willie Wilson in that debate. I don't know if I remember that, where he cut him off. He goes, here's my question. Here's my question. Answer this question. Mayor Emanuel is very careful and has always been careful to avoid those kinds of situations. And they could get contentious very easily.
It's curious, as you point out, that Ponce is capable of doing it, but he didn't seem, for one reason or another, to do it.
With Emanuel,
the mayor. Yeah. If you have an election with the incumbent has the most relevant experience to question.
Now we're getting into the details of that specific debate. You have four people up there, okay? And so you don't want to turn it into a Q&A with the mayor.
That's true.
It's supposed to be everybody gets their opportunity. There's also a level of respect, I think, that's at play, which is interesting. He is the mayor of Chicago. So to cut him off for WTTW would be asking a lot. I'd be asking a lot of anybody, actually, just to cut him off and, wait, hold it, Mr. Mayor. You know, I've seen attempts, interviews with Rahm where he has been cut off and he doesn't really like it that much. And here's the thing about him, as he says, he sticks to his talking points. So I just wrote this in a post. Regardless of the question, he gives you the answer he wants to give. He delivers
exactly.
It. Yeah. It's almost though his brain picks up on code words in the question. So for instance, in that Phil Ponce debate, the mayor was asked how it could possibly be that Alderman Ed Burke's street on the southwest side was treated as a major arterial when in fact it's like a cul-de-sac, a small dead-end street that goes nowhere, and was treated as like a major significant roadway, so they got plowed five times within the first 24 hours of that 20-inch blizzard. What Mayor Rahm's brain did was it focused on the word snowplow, and then he used that as an example to promote the city's plow tracker system, which is some cockamamie device we have on the internet now. They throw information at you.
Which I heard is sometimes not actually true.
Sometimes. Let's not go down the road of whether. Let's not get into that, okay? So to Ponce's credit, he came back with that. And
he didn't get an answer.
Didn't get an answer. And then to the discredit of the others, they didn't pick it up.
Right.
Okay, so there was an opportunity to talk about clout. There's an opportunity to talk about how this is still very much a city of who you know. There's no equity in this town. Ed Burke is a remnant of like this old corrupt political machine that we supposedly got rid of, that Mayor Rahm is bragging he got rid of, and yet he's the finance chair. He still has the police protection, and now apparently he has around-the-clock snow removal operation.
So if I'm one of the undecided voters watching this, and I see that no one is challenging him in that manner, including the challengers, to whose benefit is to do that, then why shouldn't I vote for Rahm? Because Rahm seems to be able to answer the questions in an articulate. And I must say, if I didn't know better, it's very content laden. He can tick off the things that he has done, and they're not lies.
No.
You know, he has done them, but what's behind the talking points?
First of all, let's put aside the issue of lying and whether he actually has done the things he said. Let's go to.
He's done them on some level.
This is a very good question, because let's just keep it right on the specific question that you're addressing, and that is this Ed Burke thing and a voter. Here's the problem with that venue. I would say most voters in Chicago who saw that were unaware. I would bet you most people who saw that were unaware that Ed Burke Street got preferential treatment. Because you'd have to have read the Sun-Times article where that story was revealed.
Right.
Furthermore, there's a certain segment of people in Chicago who do not know who Ed Burke is.
That's true.
So everything I just orated about his power and how he's been around forever, his wife's on the Supreme Court, he's arguably the most influential man in Cook County politics, essentially selects our judges because of the slating process, is completely unknown to your average voter in Chicago.
He's the power behind the curtain.
That is correct. So there's a level of ignorance in Chicago that is stupefying and works to the benefit of Rahm.
So some people are just going to tune that out anyway.
Yeah, they're like, I don't understand it. I don't know. And their brain will just leave it because they don't know.
No.
So if you're asking a question, you have to
provide context.
You have to you have to go, the most powerful man in Chicago with Eddie Verdoliak teamed up to fight Harold Washington. You know, his wife is
you could do it in under 5 seconds.
Yeah. You do it under 5 seconds. You get passionate, you get red in the face like I am right now, just talking about it. So when you get to what would your average voter think, I'd say that there's degrees of response. So there's the voter who has absolutely no idea what they're talking about and is just going to zone it out and wait to the next question, okay? They're the voter who sort of knows what they're talking about, but has come to the opinion, and there's a lot of people like this, that, well, a little clout is just the way the system works. I want my alderman to exercise clout on me, so I can live with that. There's people who are going to say, yeah, I love Ed Burke. I love Rahm. I'm going to vote for him anyway. And they get mad at the question. And then there's the people who understand what Ponce's getting at, and they wouldn't vote for Rahm in a million years.
That's the choir.
So there's your enlightened citizenry of the city of Chicago, in whose hands our future is held. So to really force Rahm to address that issue, which probably would never happen in a million years because he is too cagey of a character, you would have to provide the context, and then you'd have to come back and hammer him. And it was similar with the other unbelievable moment in the debate. It hit home. And again, I give Phil Ponce credit for this. I really do. Because that was not an easy job, what he had to do. And I overall give him high grades for that.
It was pretty hard situation.
Yeah. Where he asked Mayor Rahm, follow me on this, listeners, about the red light camera program where people get ticketed for going through red lights. There's cameras. And Mayor Rahm's entourage is just flying through these red lights.
It's widely reported.
It's been widely reported. Not widely as I'd like, but whatever.
Widely to us geeks.
Yeah, to us geeks. So I think there's probably more people in Chicago, which is an interesting point, who are aware of Rahm flying through red lights and knowing what that means in the total scheme of things.
Because the system pushes people's buttons
that
all over
correct.
The city.
As opposed to people who know who Ed Burke is.
Right.
Okay? So there's like a gradation of sophistication and intelligence and knowledge on the part, or reverse it, ignorance on the part of it. So I would say more people know about red lights, okay?
It's more of a populist issue.
Yeah, because you have to pay the ticket. Yeah. All right. Now, if you just ask average Chicago voter, just calm down, big feller. Just give me 30 seconds of your time, all right? I'm going to tell you who Ed Burke
really
is.
It really summons the image of the Chicago voter.
Yeah, they're like, oh, man, all right, hold on. Let me put aside the Blackhawks for a moment. Then you might get them outraged at the injustice of their street clogged with snow and Ed Burke's street so clean you could play pool on it. Okay, but it would take a little time. Where's right.
Red light, instantaneous.
So the question was a good one. Mayor Rahm, you say this program is important for safety reasons. You're flying through the freaking red lights left and right. I actually thought that was a very important question, and the mayor danced around immediately. Red light. So, of course, now let's follow the brain patterns in the mayor's head.
He
red
went to light. His talking point.
Yeah, my talking point. Red light, talking point. Oh, yes. It was a corrupt program, and I cleaned it up, and I got rid of 16 red lights. Nobody knows what that means. You know what I'm saying? Like the total scheme of things. But the point is, but what about the fact that this is a law and a rule that everybody hates and everybody is saddled with, but you, it just seems like you're immune to it. That's the issue here. You know, you got to come back and punch him, force him on that issue, right? So eventually Ponce, to his credit, forced that issue on him, and the mayor's response, weak, mumbled, muttered, suddenly wasn't clear and coherent, was he blamed it on the security guard. I don't know if you know, well, I wasn't driving the car.
Right,
oh,
right.
Like you were just some innocent, help, he's going so fast. Oh my God. And there's nothing I could do. I'm so helpless.
He's being held captive.
Yeah, he's held captive.
By these guys with guns.
Guys with guns. His security force. So again, I would hope that the average Chicago voter would see that for the utter hypocrisy that it is. Some do. So there's varying degrees. Some reaction will be, yes, it's utterly hypocritical, but I'm not going to hold that against him because I like what he's done. My neighborhood has prospered. I'm rich and I'm successful. Life is good. Okay. Or, yes, I know it's hypocritical, but who cares? The other guys would probably do the same thing. It happens all the time. I'm rich. My neighborhood's doing well. I prosper. okay? Or, yes, I know it's hypocritical. It kind of pisses me off, but President Obama has endorsed him. So, oh my God, I have to do whatever President Obama tells me.
And mind you, it's probably a very small sliver of the electorate that's actually watching these things.
That is correct. That's another point. Yeah, you and I are obsessing over each detail. There's like 10 people out of like the total pool have watched it.
Right.
So it's the clueless, you know, who are deciding our fate.
I want to come back to that, but I just want to make one more point about the format. The very first forum, I believe, was the one at the Chicago Temple, held by a women's alliance, where each candidate, each of the five candidates, had about, I don't know, a half hour on the stage with the interviewer, who was NPR's Cheryl Corley. So that is the forum that we're talking about, where the interviewer has a chance to grill the mayor, but I was there.
I was not there.
Well, you can watch it, and she doesn't do what we're asking, okay, you know, the penetrating moderator to do. So even given the opportunity, it didn't happen.
I'll go back and watch that other one. Although after a while, it's really hard to take.
Really,
I got to be honest with you. It's like brutal.
After the third
it's
one.
It's brutal, you know.
It's like listening to that Obama spot, you know, hearing the same talking points from Emmanuel over and over again. It would be interesting, as we're saying, if they were challenged.
Yeah.
Let's step back then to the bigger issue of who is voting even. And we have some statistics to show us that in the November 2014 election, less than half of registered voters in Chicago voted.
Wow.
Their number for registered voters in Chicago is about 1.4 million. But not all the citizens who are eligible to vote are registered. According to the census statistics for Illinois, only 60% of voting age citizens are registered. So using rough stats, only about a third of those who are eligible to vote do vote in Chicago.
Wow.
So in some ways, what we're doing is talking about inside baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many who have commented on this, you know, does voting matter? And I'll just pick one, Professor Noam Chomsky, linguist and activist. Let's listen to something he said about voting in a speech. Someone asked him, does voting matter? And here's what he said.
Just ask yourself what's changed anything in the past. What individuals did never made any difference. What organized groups of people did made a big difference. You know, that's why we don't have feudalism, we don't have slavery. In recent years, the civil rights movement is an example, the anti-war movements, solidarity movements, environmental movements, feminist movements, you name them, right in our own immediate history, they've made a big difference. The labor movement has been the centerpiece of most struggles for social justice for obvious reasons. When people get together, even people who are poor and without power and privilege and so on, when they get together, they can do quite a lot. In fact, there's no limits to what they can do. But if they sit alone and ask, what can I do? Nothing will happen.
So my question to you is just kind of stepping back is, do we put too much energy and emphasis on voting and not on, as Professor Chomsky says, citizen movements?
Well, first of all, let me just say, I love Professor Chomsky. He's a guy whose ideas are, I find, so interesting, so fascinating, so on target. But when he delivers them, they're so
boring,
dry. I think it's all part and parcel of the same thing. Like a social movement and a campaign are the same things.
But campaigns have an end. You know, they have an end.
Well,
game.
They don't have to.
They don't have to, but typically, wouldn't you agree?
Yes, and that's correct. I think that it's easier to get people, God, this is so Alinsky. Like, I mean, Alinsky always said.
Saul Alinsky,
yeah.
Organizing maven.
It's easier to get people impassioned one way or another about a specific person, okay? So you've got to put a face on a complicated issue. So in terms of an election, you literally have two faces at least. So you have the person that you absolutely love, the person you absolutely despise, or it's somewhere in the middle, so you have to decide, who do I despise less? It's easier to get excited and impassioned over an election, and then you're also correct, when the election's over, it's easier just to go back into your stupor.
Back to the flock.
Yes. This current campaign and what Emmanuel's doing underscores the point that Alinsky is making, where Rahm's entire campaign is set up to tell the voter something contrary to what the voters already know. And that's what I was getting at. The voters, to a large degree, as I see it, are wrestling with the inconsistency of the performance of the mayor and the campaign of the mayor. Will they summon up enough courage, independence, I don't know what word to say, no, I'm going to vote against the policies that I despise Or will they just, like the sheep that they generally are, take another round, you know, and they bend over and get another dose? And it's
the sheep imagery there.
Yeah, no, that's beyond sheep. It's like farmers and sheep. It's a whole bunch of things.
Sorry.
So a lot of activists will say we have to build movements that exist beyond the election. So these are a lot of activists who tell me, like, for instance, it's really more important than electing a new mayor is electing five more progressive aldermen. Because those aldermen force issues. I agree with that. The band of eight, there were eight of them, forced Mayor Rahm to pass a minimum wage. They forced that issue along with the activists who were in the streets of Chicago for Fight for 15. They forced Mayor Rahm. He realized that his political survival was contingent on passing a higher minimum wage in Chicago. He wouldn't have done it without the people in the streets or without the opposition aldermen.
So that's evidence of some social movement formation.
That is correct.
In Chicago.
It's usually on the losing side of these battles, but in the last year, I mean, take a look at it one by one. Rahm has put a moratorium on charters for the moment. So he stopped the charter. He did not want to go into this election cycle having approved a whole bunch of new charters. Kind of dropped back from that a little bit.
But that is a campaign, arguably a campaign tactic rather than an ongoing response to social movements.
Well,
the proof will be after the election.
Okay, now this is, now you're getting into my rip-roaring debate that I've been having with the head of the Chicago Firefighters Union, which is a debate that I've written about at least twice on the internet, so you have to find it in a blog post. I've not put it in the newspaper.
And just for our listeners' benefit, the Firefighters Local, their parent union, did come out with a campaign contribution.
That's correct.
To Emanuel.
Well, there are two things. One, the Firefighter Union Local endorsed Rahm, and then the International, which is the parent union, as you said, donated $25,000 to Rahm's campaign, which is like, I wrote a blog post. It's like, well, you guys are just spending your members' dues to destroy your union. I mean, that's got to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And we've had a very respectful debate back and forth where the president of the Firefighters Union, Tom Ryan, tells me that he believes that Mayor Rahm deserves their endorsement and their donation because he agreed to a contract eventually and that he, Ryan, believes that Rahm has seen the light and going forward will be working in collaboration with them as opposed to dictating things to them, which is how he started the first two or three years in office. And I respectfully disagree with him. I think that they forced Rahm to settle on that contract in much the same way the Fight for 15 people forced him to increase the minimum wage because he was facing re-election. If Karen Lewis had run, he would have lost.
Arguably, the firefighter example is slightly different because we're talking about a collective bargaining unit that is regularly going hat in hand to the mayor to get concessions on a contract negotiation. And even though the head of the union denies that there's a quid pro quo involved, arguably that's always what's going on. You know, we're going to give you something, you're going to give us something.
Yes, but the specifics may be different, but there's an overriding similarity, and that is this. When Mayor Rahm took office, just let's talk about collective bargaining. He was very Rauner-like in his antagonism toward unions. And he was positioning himself to be a different kind of Democrat, even more forceful than Mayor Daley, who he would name, but he alluded to. And we're going to cut back the power these unions have had in this city. And we're going to force concessions to protect the taxpayers.
Definitive rhetoric.
It was definitive rhetoric. Absolutely. That's very well put. And in terms of the firefighters, he was literally going into fire stations and telling them, I'm going to cut your pensions. Now, it doesn't get more combative and confrontational than that. He pulled back. I take full credit for this. When I wrote a post about the great Sam Holloway, Green Party member, who confronted him on this, and he pulled back. He stopped doing it. So I think that he was definitely pushing in a very strong ideological direction and using those first 2 years, the momentum he had over those first 2 and 3 years to try to get concessions from the firefighters. They resisted him. He backed off on the pension fight, gave them a contract. So there's two conclusions you can draw from that. One, you, the firefighters, held the upper hand. You forced them to make a change. Now go back to neutrality, all right? Or two, Rahm had a wonderful change of heart, having nothing to do with the pending campaign, and he's just a new man now. He's turned into FDR, and he's your friend, and should be the beneficiary of $25,000 to crush the opposition and therefore take away any accountability, any hold you have over this guy. So I disagree with the position taken by the Firefighters Union. They disagree with me. They think he has had a change of heart.
At least that's their stated position.
That is their stated position. I cannot read their minds. You're correct. So I think there are some similarities. And I think that social movements absolutely are the key. And that if we view elections as the end-all be-all, we're going to be disappointed in the long run. That's for sure.
Well, on that note, we'll still encourage everyone who's listening to get out and vote.
Noam Chomsky says, don't bother.
And tell your friends they should get out there and vote.
Yes.
Ben, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, we welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions for future interviews. You can get those to us by emailing us via contact@shygov.com or go to Facebook and Twitter and search for Inside Chicago Government. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.